If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, dini, wal-azam, ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Before we deal with the law of miscellaneous nature, which is the topic today, and inshallah in the upcoming episodes, let's take a listen to a short biography of Ayatollah Sistani.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hausa lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazwini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Back to the program Islamic Law on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and our dear guest speaker, as always in the studio, sitting with me, Sheikh Javid. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me on this program.
Welcome. Sheikh Javid, since we are talking about, Ayatollah Sistani's fatwas about these issues that we are talking about, and in the previous episode, we started talking about kosher and their jurisprudential status of what a kosher is and what it is, in fact, to Muslims when it comes to eating. Would you tell our audience about the general status of the food which are in the non-Muslim countries, especially in the countries where there are lots of non-believers, you know, or disbelievers. So how can Muslims go about such food?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, we have to classify non-Muslims into two groups.
Mm-hmm.
One being the people of the book.
Yes.
And the other, the atheists, the pagans, the Buddhists, Sikhs, and these people who do not believe in an Abrahamic religion, on a divine religion.
Mm-hmm.
So Islam differentiates between these two categories of non-Muslims, okay? When it comes to the people of the book, they are ritually pure.
Yes.
And Muslims can easily interact with them. They can have give and take relationship with the people of the book. They are better known as Ahle Kitab, mm-hmm. okay?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it's permissible to eat their food. It's permissible to eat from the same plate and to share your food with the people of the book.
Right.
They are not najis or ritually impure. So it's always easy to interact with Christians, with Jews, and with Zoroastrians, according to Ayatollah Sistani, because according to his eminence,
mm-hmm.
Zoroastrians are also the people of the book.
Mm-hmm.
They are followers of a divine religion.
Right.
But this is obviously contentious.
Mm-hmm.
And many scholars and many Muslims have contradicted this issue or this.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the food served by Christians, of course we can eat the food given by them by the people of the book, and we do need to investigate whether the food is impure or not. As long as the food does not contain meat,
mm-hmm.
as long as the food does not contain any animal ingredients, we are allowed to eat that food.
By animal ingredient, you mean?
Okay, animal fat.
Uh-huh.
Animal fat is there. Of course, there are other ingredients which come originally from animals. And
what about eggs?
Eggs are halal, you know. If they come from chicken, they are halal.
Yeah, if they come from chicken, but, you know, lots of birds are not halal. So
you know,
if their eggs come to the market, then...
When we talk about eggs that come from chicken are easily, I think, you can
recognize
them. You can tell that these eggs are the eggs of a chicken. Not of a crow or, let's say, an eagle or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So eggs are halal as long as you establish or as long as you're certain that the eggs come from a chicken,
mm-hmm.
see. But speaking about food, about meals in Western, in European or in American restaurants, of
mm-hmm.
course, because majority of the people there are Christians, it's not necessary to ask the individual who touches the food whether he is a Buddhist or a Christian. You can consider those non-Muslims as Christians, as people of the book, because the majority of the people there are people of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when you come across a non-Muslim person, it is not necessary to consider, it's not necessary to ask him whether he is a Christian or a Buddhist or a Sikh or someone, okay? You can treat him as
a member of the majority.
As a member of the majority. And therefore, it's not necessary to ask. This is the main issue to,
right.
To understand and to take notice of. And then the food that he gives you, if you even know, if you are sure that the food has been touched by him. For example, if he brings you vegetable and he has washed the vegetable or he has washed the dishes with naked hands,
mm-hmm.
Or he has touched the food in the state of wetness, the food is treated as halal, as permissible.
Even if
it is wet, of course. Yeah, because the people of the book are pure,
uh-huh,
pure, ritually pure.
I see.
But it's necessary to make sure.
Okay. Let me actually take a break here, and then we'll be back and continue our discussion. Don't go away.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program, Islamic Law on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our dear guest speaker. So, Sheikh Javid, you were speaking just before the break about, you know, the people of the Borg are ritually pure, so whenever they touch the food, it doesn't make it actually contaminated, ritually speaking.
Yes.
So
yeah,
you were saying?
Course. There's no cross, you know... You know, there is a term used like cross contamination. That's what we are not talking about it. Okay, mm-hmm. Cross contamination can apply when, for example, the cook is cooking pork in one, let's say, cauldron, and then halal meat in another, and he is using the same spoon, mm-hmm. the same utensils, the same cutleries, and
right.
so on and so forth. This cross contamination is may occur.
Right.
But
sure.
we are not sure, and we are not duty bound. We are not obliged to investigate, to make sure whether cross contamination has occurred or
yes.
not. Of course, so you can eat the food served in American restaurants and European restaurants, provided that the food does not contain meat mm-hmm. and animal ingredients. That's
right.
for sure. When it comes to the countries with a majority Hindu population like India and many southeastern nations,
mm-hmm.
see, there are also Muslims living in those countries, of course, and those Muslims have greater problem
yes.
As compared to Muslims living in the West, because as a Muslim you are living in a Hindu majority community.
Right.
And you interact with them. Of course, interaction is something inevitable. You have to do business with them. You have to sell things to them and also buy things from
yes.
them. That's for sure. But when it comes to eating their food, Grand Ayatollah Sistani is of the opinion that as long as you do not know that the food is najis, is impure.
Mm-hmm.
And insofar as the food does not contain, let's say, meat and these things, then
or the meat products,
it is permissible to eat the food,
right?
Because Muslims, okay, for example, Muslims traveling from one province to another province, let's say a person, a Shia Muslim, travels from Bihar to Bombay in India.
Yes,
so he travels a long way, and he is of course he has to go to Bombay with few Muslim population. He cannot find any hotel, any restaurant. So what should he do? He should eat the food that he does not know that he doesn't know to be
mm-hmm.
to be impure.
Yes.
So there's also something. There's also one important thing to note, and that is Hindus are ritually impure. Sikhs are ritually impure. If we know that they have touched something
yes.
in the state of wetness, for example, with his hand
mm-hmm.
being wet,
yes.
or with the object being wet, and the touching has taken place,
yes.
we cannot use that thing.
I see.
It's for prayer, whether it's for eating. For example, if the plate has been washed by a Hindu with naked hand, you know,
mm-hmm.
we cannot use it. And if the vegetable that you are going to eat has been washed by a Hindu without using gloves, okay, you cannot eat that.
Or kitchen utensils.
Yeah, kitchen utensils. And there are Muslims living, having Hindu roommates.
Right.
Hindu roommates. Mm-hmm. They live in the same room. They use the same bathroom, the same, you see, washroom, you know.
Yes.
So they cannot... They cannot, you know, go against what they have seen, because when you see something, then that is definitely that brings you the certainty.
Exactly,
and you cannot go against what you have seen.
Okay,
so things that are impure must be avoided.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. I hope you enjoyed this show, and you keep us in your du'as. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله